Good evening and welcome to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. You can also go to www.guardiantalkradio.com, download the app and take us with you when you're on the move. You can also go there, stream us live, and listen to all the archive shows. So tonight in the studio, I have a very exciting guest with me, young Bahamian filmmaker Travolta Cooper. Welcome, Travolta.
Thank you for having me, Amanda.
And we're here to speak about, well, the release of The Black Moses on DVD and also an event we're going to be having at the Art Gallery tomorrow night. But I really wanted to talk to you before we get into the film itself. It seems like Bahamian film is having a bit of a moment. People like Maria Gavan, Kareem Mortimer, yourself, really getting out there on the festival circuit and, you know, letting people know that we have this sort of creative movement. Do you feel part of a sort of a movement with your colleagues?
No doubt. When I came home in 2008, Maria was just releasing Rain and Kareem was just wrapping up Children of God. Both became friends. And Kareem was already a friend. Maria became a friend. And yeah, no doubt. I think in particular with Rain, which for me is this really great Bahamian film. Like, I love Rain.
I love that film too.
I really feel like it opened the doors for, I was telling Maria, it's interesting how this character, you know, our protagonist in the film, Rain herself, comes of age, because it feels like Bahamian film came of age too.
Yeah, well, I think that's in a way what I feel like too, exactly.
Right.
That there's been sort of, it's been happening over the last 20 years,
right,
here and there, but it
right
seems now there's sort of
maturity.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, so I definitely feel a part of that coming of age. I feel a part of that maturity, this movement that we're seeing right now in Bahamian film. Mm.
And how did you get into filmmaking as a young Bahamian? Pick up a camera and?
Since the cradle. I sometimes wonder if I was pre-wired for it, because my mother loved movies and mm-hmm she gave me the name of a movie star.
I know, right?
But ever since I knew myself, I was 4 years old in Catholic school and performing. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it started. I just remember reciting poems, and I guess I was really good at it. And so teachers would write skits for me and have mm-hmm me perform before the whole island, and mm-hmm then that grew into writing, that grew into directing. It's just always been my true north. I've always wanted to be a part of this creative process.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
And The Black Moses came out last year. You
yes
did the festival circus. Tell us a little
yes
bit about that. Which festivals did you hit and what was the feedback?
It closed BIFF, first Bahamian film to close BIFF, so that was a huge deal.
Wow.
Talk about coming of age and maturity.
Mm-hmm.
I think, because Kareem and Maria's films had opened BIFF before. We'd never had a Bahamian movie close BIFF.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the first time you had a movie, a Bahamian film open the festival and close it, which was remarkable.
Yeah, which is fantastic.
So from BIFF, we went on to Cannes, the Cannes Film Festival,
mm-hmm,
where we got world distribution. The movie then opened in Los Angeles and New York.
Mm-hmm.
It had a 2-week run in both theaters and also here in the Bahamas at Galleria.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another sort of milestone.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did a tour. We did a family island tour. We went from island to island that didn't necessarily have theaters and screened it there. And then we did a university tour.
Mm-hmm.
Hampton, Morehouse, Spelman, on and on and on. And now we're here. Now we're releasing it on DVD. And the feedback has been phenomenal.
Well, tell me a little bit about the different kinds, because those are very different audiences you're
yes
speaking about. I mean, you're
yes
speaking about in Los Angeles and New York, a very sophisticated
yes
film audience that are probably looking at it from technical terms, but
right
also, and probably that don't know that much about Caribbean history at all.
Of course.
And then you're speaking about, you know, a lot of black colleges, so they've probably got a bit more awareness about certain
yes
movements in history.
Yes.
And then, of course, you're talking about a local community. What were the different reactions?
Excellent question. I think the movie was sort of, the movie was made in a way, I had a very simple premise. The premise was basically going to be, I imagined if this character, I didn't know that Dennis Haysbert was going to end up playing him.
Yeah, so, that was pretty amazing. I don't know if all the audience knows that, but Dennis Haysbert basically plays the kind of all the all-knowing sort of character of the Black Moses, who sort of shapeshifts. It's not, you know, because that was what was interesting for me, is I thought it was going to be pretty much just about Elo Pindling, but then I realized it was really about this sort of mythological figure of the Black Moses that has shifted from Africa to the Caribbean islands to the United States and has been embodied by different men and women.
Yes.
So it's a really global history lesson, as well as a very pointed history lesson about the Bahamas.
Correct.
And Dennis Haysbert, that was amazing. Anyhow, tell me about the reaction and then how you got him.
and so with that said, I always knew that there was going to be sort of a multitude of audiences.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that there was going to be an audience that knew nothing about Pindling, but was going to be interested in this mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And in being interested in this mythology, but learn a lot more about Elo Pindling. My original pitch and sell for the film was that I wanted to share the Bahamian story with the world.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make this a story for international audiences. And so the idea was always going to be that Black Moses surfaces and he's telling his story through the life and times of Elo Pindling.
Because
he's been Mandela, he's been all these characters. And when you go into these characters or when you go into these cultures, you realize that the people refer to these men as their Black Moses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly a sort of theme that comes up over and over again.
And so, but when Dennis came on board, Dennis came on board because I'm friends with Pamela Poitier, Sister Sydney's daughter. And she'd heard that we were looking for an actor. We had already hired this actor out of Great Britain that we were going to fly in and have him do it. Just an unknown stage actor that was actually pretty good. And Pamela got the script and she started sending off the script to her friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm thinking, oh, these are just Pam's friends. Mm-hmm. So we get an email from Dennis Haysbert's manager. And I'm like, I keep forgetting this is Sydney Poitier's daughter.
Right, yeah, yeah. Her friends aren't just, you know, Joe Blow. Yeah,
no,
exactly.
Her friends are Morgan Freeman. And you know, these sort of giants in Hollywood. And so that was shocking.
But that's amazing because it brought his voice is so awesome, and I mean that in the traditional sense of the word awesome, not in the sort of, you know, skater version.
Right.
He's really got this sort of resonance and this, you know, that when you're listening to him and that gravelly voice is talking about being Moses, you know, it really brings such an authority and such a sense of mysticism in a way to it.
Yeah, this film critic in Freeport, he said that Dennis Haysbert makes you want to sit there and pay attention.
Yeah, exactly. It's true. It's true.
Like, you may not be that interested in the history, but he makes you sit there and he makes you pay attention.
Yeah, very much so.
And I thought that was remarkable. But yeah, so Dennis got it, and the movie then went to a whole other stratosphere because this is the Allstate man, and everybody knows that voice. You may not know the name, but you go to America, all you have to say is the Allstate man. Are you in good hands?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows that voice.
But he's also done a lot of very serious filmmaking too. So I mean, that's
and
what's interesting
weird
is he's
become known as the Allstate
guy.
I
know, right?
But he's like, in my head, you know, that movie Far From Heaven.
Oh, a fantastic film.
Yeah, like, Dennis is amazing. Like, you know, like he's an actor I follow for a long time. But when we started to screen it across, you know, in America and screen it here at home, you started to see the reaction from different audiences. I think American audiences definitely gravitated to this character, Black Moses himself, and Dennis's performance.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, was amazed to discover this history that they knew nothing about.
Right.
Bahamian audiences were awestruck by the knowledge. Things they didn't know. A lot of people don't know about Randall Fox.
I know, which I'm very surprised about. But I think a lot of it is, again, it's the writing of a mythology. You know, I mean, you need to bring a nation together. So you want to just create a sort of easy storyline to follow.
Right.
And I think it happens very often that the people that were the foundation layers,
maybe
they don't become the ones in the history books. It becomes that personality. And I mean, that also was very clear from this film about like what Elo Pindling was this incredible speaker.
Yes.
And this incredible personality who could, again, there was one person that says, you know, you could give him your own sales pitch and he would turn it around and sell it back to you and you would be like, okay, yeah, that's, you know, I think that was Loftus Rokar speaking.
Yes,
and you know, clearly he just was so charismatic.
Yes.
And I suppose, you know, in order to write a narrative that was easy to follow, you know, people got cut out somehow, whether it was, you know, intentional or unintentional.
Right.
Because I found that, you know, we're trying to work on a mural now in the Lewis Street area that's sort of talking about the taxi cab driver strike and Sir Randall Fox and his, you know, because he laid a lot of that groundwork, right? And by the time Pindling came back from school, I mean, a lot of the dirty work had been done already.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of rally the people and yes. and create a foundation upon which,
yes.
you know, a party could be built.
Yes.
So I thought that was very, very interesting. But there was a lot of stuff I learned from this, really, so much. So who did all the research? Was that you?
That was pretty much me. You know, I had come off of, I did a film before this on Stafford Sands. Mm-hmm. So I was already entrenched in Bahamian history, and there was so much I wanted in the Stafford film that I couldn't put in. Mm-hmm. So many colorful characters like Randall Fox didn't make the cut of Stafford. And so, yeah, I've really been entrenched in researching Bahamian history, I'd say now, for about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually looking forward to do something that's not Bahamian or historical. Well, Bahamian would be fine, but historical, I'm just trying to shy away from that for a while. But it was a lot of work, and the more I kept digging, the more I kept finding. And, you know, we traveled all over the world making the film, did interviews in London. So, of course, I ended up at the archives in London,
mm-hmm.
Discovered footage that the country doesn't even have. All that stuff you saw in the movie on the general strike, that's not here. That's in London.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, historians have also spoken about that, too, yes. about how, of course, because we were a colony
yes.
until 73, all the records are actually really in the UK.
Yes.
And so if you really want to do any in-depth study of Bahamian history, yes. a lot of it is over there, not here.
And also to add to that, what also ended up happening was because of this sort of black nationalist movement that was happening in the 60s, you had a lot of, and I'm going to say it, you had a lot of idiots who were burning our history, who mm-hmm. were sort of like I know Stafford Sands' office, for one. People went in there and took out droves of photos and footage and archival stuff, just our history, and burned it as a means of solidarity or as a means of creating a new Bahamas. And we ended up losing a lot of history, a lot of our own history.
And I think that's something this film talks about and that we have to kind of grapple with as a country, is, you know, facing these uncomfortable histories.
Right.
You know, can you imagine if everything from the Holocaust had been burned?
Precisely.
Right, you know, and what Germany has done is really confront that head on, publish right. things that are horrible to read and right. create, you know, and I mean, that's the difficulty of history. What monuments do you leave up? What monuments do you knock down? Precisely. What buildings do you leave up? But it is all part of the history.
Yes.
So while even I feel like Queen Victoria and Rawson Square is sort of weird,
right.
why not, rather than get rid of it, build another one facing
right.
her
right.
with some of the right. leaders from Independence? You know, right. you have to leave the... You can't erase the history.
Right. I love what Sir Arthur Folk says. He says, with history, you've got to... Sir Arthur Folk's actually been a guiding voice doing a lot of this, doing Stafford and doing this. And he said, with history, you've got to let the chips fall where they may. You know, some of it you may not like, but you've got to face it, because the danger in revising it is repeating it.
Of course.
You know, you've got to let it be what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And... in informing people and in shining a light on it, you know, you then help people not repeat.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what is so great about this film and so interesting. So I'm here this evening with Travolta Cooper, the director and producer
yes.
of The Black Moses, the film that we will be screening part of tomorrow night at the NGB, and then having a panel discussion afterwards, actually. It's currently just being released on DVD. It is an excellent film. I really recommend. I mean, I feel like it should be screened in all the schools. But so come out tomorrow night if you want to hear some lively discussion, but also catch a glimpse of the film and maybe pick up a copy. So we're going to go to a short break. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We'll be right back after this break. And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Remember, you can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/NAG blank canvas. You can see who's coming on the show and maybe leave a comment. And you can also go to www.guardiantalkradio.com, stream us live, or download the app so you can take us with you. So I am sitting here in the studio with Travolta Cooper, who is a Bahamian filmmaker, and we're speaking about the film that is right about to come out on DVD, The Black Moses, and talking about history, about Bahamian history, and about film. I mean, people very often don't consider film an art form, or they don't think it's part of the visual. You know, it sort of seems like a sort of separate thing.
Yes.
But I think... and that's why I like to show films at the NAGB and talk about them, because, you know, really it's a such a great way to communicate. Uh-huh. And is, of course, it's an art form in its own right. Do you feel being a filmmaker is somehow different? Do you relate to visual artists as well? Is that, or do you feel like it's a sort of separate thing and filmmaking is its own kind of specialty?
No question. It's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
The magic of movies is that movies are really an amalgamation of all the arts.
Yes.
You mentioned Maria earlier. Mm-hmm. And Rain. And I remember having this conversation with Maria, and she was talking about how much Amos Ferguson's sort of abstract art impacted her on Rain. Because the script she wrote, a lot of what she wrote didn't really end up on the screen, but mm-hmm. It was really going to be this sort of magical realism kind of film. That's really what she had originally envisioned. And a lot of that, again, came from Amos Ferguson and visual art.
Well, I guess something also people don't realize how many people are involved in making a film. So,
yes.
Of course, there's set designers and there's a lot of different artists involved. You had a really fantastic animator. I don't know who did those animations.
His name was Jason Evans.
Okay.
Yes. He's a Bahamian.
Yeah, I know Jason. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And he did a really good job. And even with that, we found a way because there was no way to find archival footage on
the Haitian Revolution, for example.
And Harriet Tubman and so forth and so on. So our thing was, we can now put animation into this. And that was easy to do on a sort of black sort of film noir canvas that we did. But again, film noir, chiaroscuro painting, which is something I studied, was a major influence on the creation of Black Moses, just having Dennis surface out of the dark.
Sure, I mean, it looks like a Caravaggio painting.
Precisely.
Mm.
Precisely.
I know my art history.
You
forget.
You would. And so, it's all connected. Music, visual painting, film, poetry. It's all art.
And you used a lot of music in this film, too?
Yes. All movies do is really bring the arts together in one sort of format.
And in this, you actually speak about cinema itself. I didn't, I always think of Sir Sidney Poitier and Guess Who's Coming for Dinner and To Sir With Love and all those really famous kind of color films where I remember him so well. But you actually spoke to a film that played itself a really important role in sort of the rising consciousness of, Black Bahamians.
Yes.
Which was the film No Way Out by Joseph Mankiewicz in 1950.
Yes.
Where Sidney Poitier played, a doctor in a hospital. And and the white guy was the one who was sort of in trouble and had a chaotic brain or what have you. And so Sidney was the professional.
Yes.
And that was actually banned here.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, I think that's a really interesting, that's something really interesting, the power of film and the power of cinema, and that you're kind of continuing that tradition. But so tell a little bit about what happened, because I'm not sure a lot of the audience know that.
Yes, and I love that you said that, because one review I got back was, I got this email, he was like, I love the part about No Way Out impacting politics. And then he said, because Mr. Cooper, I really believe that the Black Moses can impact politics and the way we move forward. So I thought that was really humbling and kind. But so in 1950, in 1950, there was a movie Sir Sidney did called No Way Out, in which he played the first black doctor. It was banned in many places throughout the world. It was banned in the South. It was banned in several other places throughout the Caribbean, and it was banned here in Nassau. The problem with it being banned in Nassau was that it was well known that Sidney Poitier was a Bahamian. And this was the rise of Randall Fox, the rabble-rouser.
Mm-hmm.
And so they weren't going to have that. They weren't going to have that this native son had did this film. And the locals weren't going to be allowed to see it. So they formed what was called a citizens committee. And the citizens committee basically lobbied and marched and fought for the right for the people to see it. And Bay Street caved in. The Bay Street Boys caved in.
Yeah, which is extraordinary. And, you know, it just takes me back to when I first moved home. I get a little bit after I first moved home, they were naming the bridge after Sir Sidney.
Yes.
And there was a bit of a public outcry that because people thought, like, he wasn't bohemian enough or something.
I know, it's crazy.
It's something crazy. Right. But that story wasn't brought out at that time. You know, I learned it just from watching the film. And, of course, I thought, well, I've always known Sir Sidney as being this man that did so much for people of African descent in Hollywood.
Right. And he's done a lot for human beings. Too. Right.
Exactly. And he's done a lot of non, but so I thought, well, but that particular story would have been such a great thing to give to the public, and you wonder why certain stories are not shared with the public,
that's why
this film is so important, because it's really bringing out so many layers of history that are unknown.
Right.
I mean, I think that a film can do that.
Yes.
You know, that a film basically got people to rise up and get one over on the Bay Street Boys is... You know, it's an awesome piece of film history.
There's so much. I mean, he and Pinling were actually, they were a block away from each other. So they all grew up in the same neighborhood. I mean, he is as bohemian as any of us.
Mm-hmm.
and you know, was very much so a part of the whole movement toward majority rule, was literally here on the day when majority rule happened, was campaigning with Pinling and so forth and so on. So, I mean, he's most unquestionably a part of the narrative. That's a whole other film.
Yeah, that is a whole other film. I thought it was really... for me, it was just seeing like how film itself had played this role in a rising consciousness.
Yes, that was the beginning of the PLP party, the Citizens Committee. That when that committee dissembled, the party sort of came to be, which I love, because I always tell people that, you know, the trappings of change don't come in a party. They come in a movement. The movement becomes a party.
Mm-hmm.
I always get worried when you see a new party being formed. Because I'm like, no, where was the movement to begin the party?
Right.
You know, if it's a party being formed, then it's just another opportunist. It's just another opportunity, so to speak. But if you have a movement, because a movement taps into a consciousness, you know, and the movement becomes a party. And so what you saw with the film happening was this movement called the Citizens Committee. And that movement, which dissembled, became a party.
Yeah, very interesting. And I think that's probably going to be some of the things that we touch on in tomorrow night's panel discussion.
Yes.
So you've invited several guests. Why don't you, so Tenille Burrows.
Yes, of Rise Bahamas.
Which is a movement.
Yes, Aaron Ferguson of Citizens Review. And I just got contacted. We just added somebody else to the panel. Citizens, I think they're called Citizens of the Bahamas. I just want to make sure I get it right.
And Bishop Gomez.
Bishop Gomez, who's also in the film, as you know.
Yes. And I think it's going to be...
Citizens for a Better Bahamas.
Oh, Citizens for a Better Bahamas.
Yes.
Yeah,
Duran,
sure. Duran Thompson.
Yes,
and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so what the aim is tomorrow night, not only to highlight the DVD coming out and people knowing about the film and being curious about the film, which again, I really encourage people to watch. I mean, I really was even rewinding things and watching it again, things that I'd missed, and calling my kids and my husband over me like, oh, look at this, you know, because it's just really packed full of information, and it's gives all the, again, all these different layers. You know, history is made up of layers, and you know, you have to tell a very direct story once history is done to sort of package it, I suppose.
Yes.
But always, as we know, history is so much more complicated than that.
Yes.
But the point of tomorrow night's panel is to sort of speak to a lot of those themes that came out, and you know, where we are today in terms of our politics. You speak about political parties being formed and no movement. There's actually quite a lot of citizens' movement, but no one is talking about them in a big way. And then meanwhile, all these new people are trying to form parties or breaking off, and that's getting a lot of news.
Right.
So we want to kind of talk about that.
Right.
And also speak to some of the issues the film raised, the dream of independence.
Yes.
What dream should that be?
Yes. Which is at heart the Pinling. I mean, love him or hate him, the Pinling story, and you can debate it to thy kingdom come, but the Pinling story at its heart is really the story about a Bahamas for Bahamians, the move toward independence. And so in that sense, it's really probably one of, if not the greatest Bahamian story that we have, that this was really a move to make this a place for its people. And so,
but the people being all different kinds of people.
That's precisely right. That's precisely
not just
right.
one kind of people.
No, that's precisely right. And so, yeah, I mean, that's if you ask me what's Pinling's major legacy to the Bahamas, I think his major legacy was integration. I think his major legacy was a nonviolent movement that encompassed this idea that it was really a Bahamas for all Bahamians. And moving forward, what does that mean? What does that mean for all of us? Mm. What does that mean in 2015?
Yeah, because it's a deep question, because a lot of people will associate independence with a certain one thing or the other.
Right.
Maybe it's about the working man. Maybe it's about Black Bahamians. Maybe it's about, you know, but to watch this film, it was, again, so much more layered and so much more complex than that.
Right.
And I never really realized how close. You know, of course, I knew about the Burma Road riots. I knew about the taxi driver strike and moments where, you know, violence was perpetrated upon the people, but or it could have tipped into something more. But I never really realized, you know, in that period, 67 to 73, how close the country had really come to kind of a revolution and how much Sir Lyndon Pinling had done to, you know, save us from that.
Yes.
Because,
no,
you know, A, you don't want blood running in the streets, and B, how do you recover from that? Mm-hmm. You know, and how the Bahamas became the kind of very economically successful country it became
yes.
quickly because yes. he had managed to orchestrate this mm-hmm. sort of peaceful mm-hmm. revolution somehow.
No question. And those that love him say that, and those that even hate him, like J. Henry Bostwick,
mm-hmm.
well, maybe he doesn't hate him, but definitely opposed his politics. They've all said that this man saved the country, this man saved the Bahamas on a number of times.
Mm.
The movement was always this close to sort of becoming very bloody. And, you know, Sir Lyndon's leadership ensured that it never went there, that it was always going to be peaceful. It was always going to happen within the system and for as long as it took. And so love him or hate him, that's the father of the nation.
Yeah. No, I mean, like I said, I really learned a lot. So I really encourage people, if you can't come out tomorrow night, do pick up the DVD. It's really something that I feel like every Bahamian should watch. There's so much about our history in there. I would love to see it in schools, but I suppose that's a radical thing to say. Because there's negative and positive. So we can talk about that a little bit after the break. We do have to go to another one, but we will be back. I'm in the studio with Travolta Cooper. We're speaking about his film, The Black Moses, which comes out on DVD tomorrow and will be available for purchase. And we're having a panel discussion at the National Art Gallery tomorrow night at 7:30.
Yes.
Because it has to be dark enough to screen a little bit of the film. And there'll be a panel discussion with various people speaking about sort of the state of the nation, the promise of the dream of independence, and where we are today. And Travolta will be there leading that discussion. We're going to go to a short break now. We'll come back and speak a little bit more about The Black Moses on The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We'll be right back after this break. And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Tonight, I have Travolta Cooper in the studio with me. Travolta is a young Bahamian filmmaker who's made several films, but tonight we're speaking about The Black Moses, which is a sort of documentary film, but also has Dennis Habert, the very well-known Hollywood actor, in there, sort of playing this role of the mythological figure of the Black Moses. It's about world history. It's about Bahamian history. It's a really fascinating film. There's a lot of great archival footage that I've never seen before, which you said you got from London, of all places. And and we're having a panel discussion tomorrow night about it at the National Art Gallery, not just about the film, but about a lot of issues the film raises, which are what is it to be an independent nation? What vision should we follow? You know, what was promised somehow to the nation, and where are we today? I suppose you have some thoughts on that, Travolta.
Yes, yes, I have tons of thoughts on that.
Maybe you save them for tomorrow night. It might get quite rowdy. It's starting at 7:30. Like I said, I mean, what's interesting about this film, a lot of there were so many layers in there. There was a lot about the relationship, the kind of conflicting relationship between Sir Lyndon Pinling and Randall Falks, who, as you mentioned, a lot of people really don't know about his place in history, that he played, you know, as important a role as Sir Lyndon, for sure, in the kind of stirring up of a national consciousness. But he's sort of somehow been sort of written out of history a little bit, although now they've claimed Labor Day for him.
Yes, they have.
Yeah, so they're trying to kind of bring him back in again a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
But there was a lot of, you found some quotes made between him and Sir Lyndon that were really, I was like rewinding, I'm like, did he really say that?
Yeah.
So they really had a lot of animosity, but as you pointed out, that reflected, you know, in the relationship of Malcolm X and Dr. King, Marcus Garvey, and and Dubois, W.E. Dubois.
Somehow in history, and again, this is past race. I should hint that when we say the Black Moses, the Black and the Black Moses, to me, as an artist, didn't just mean race. The Black comes from this whole idea of film noir, you know, it's moral ambiguity. Mm-hmm. You know, like you look at films like The Black Swan or The Black Dahlia, these sort of film noir.
Well, you have these anti-heroes, right?
Precisely.
The hero who's had to do something questionable.
Yes.
In order for a greater good.
Yes.
And that's a very common thread through film noir.
Yes.
And in a way that is something you also bring up here, is you bring up a lot of the, you know, there were a lot of accusations made against Sir Lyndon.
Right.
And you don't really, you know, answer whether they were true or not true. You really put forward all the different sides, and you speak to his fans and his detractors.
Right.
And you kind of leave it for the audience. But one of the kind of deep questions is, if he had done X, Y, or Z, was it actually justifiable?
Right.
So do the ends justify the means? If the ends are freedom for people, sending kids off to college in the United States, does that justify certain practices that were done to raise money? Or, you know, and I think that's a really interesting thread.
Right. Yeah. And so with that said, moral ambiguity, like that's, Black isn't just a race. Black is also moral ambiguity in the Black Moses. That's really the idea. And so, you know, throughout history, when you're dealing with these revolutions, you know, Miles Monroe said famously, he said, Moses is a prototype. You know, it's not just this character. It's a pattern. The story itself, the biblical story, you have two narratives. Mm-hmm. You have the narrative that comes from the Torah, and you have the narrative that comes from the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're different narratives. Mm-hmm. One is integrationist and one is separatist. You know, and that comes all the way down through history. When you have these sort of saviors or Christ, even the story of Jesus Christ himself, when you study that whole time period, you realize that there was a guy called Jesus Barabbas, whereas Jesus Christ was this integrationist and peace and give unto Caesars what is Caesars and God what is God's.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Barabbas wanted to tear up the town. Mm-hmm. He was very much so the separatist. And so you have these alternates. And so the question then becomes, which is right, which is wrong, which is good, which is evil? Again, which is up to the people to determine and interpret. And so Black is much more concerned with ambiguity, moral ambiguity as well.
Yeah, well, I thought it was very interesting. You found a great clip, too, because in terms of separatism, I mean, there are people that believe good fences make good neighbors. I'm not sure I believe that myself.
The South Africa.
But the quote from the South African guy, you know, which is, you know, when is separatism
good
okay? Right? No, but exactly. Apartheid is just good neighborliness. So you're like, if someone wants to start a state and say, you know, only redheaded people can live here, is that racist or is that not racist? If other people say it, somehow it's okay.
Right.
Somehow it's not. Some others say it, it's not okay.
Right.
So it's a really interesting question of, like, you know, where do you draw the line?
Precisely.
I mean,
Precisely. And I was interested in that whole concept with Stafford Sands too. The creating this culture of double standards and the danger of that. Mm-hmm. The fact that if you were going to take Stafford Sands off the $10 note, then you were going to have to scrutinize all these other people that are on the note too and hold them accountable to the same standards.
Right.
And so that's very, 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 very dangerous. And we need to be clear about not creating a culture of double standards in that sense. So, yeah.
Don't you think we kind of have created a culture of double standards?
No question. No question.
Yeah.
And the new Bahamas has to be a culture of no double standards. Yeah. That's also a part of it. That's a part of the narrative of where do we go from here?
Yeah. Do you think some double standards are sometimes necessary in the, you know, like you look at a lot of revolutionaries and, you know, they start out with these great, you know, really idealistic visions, but then very often it tips over into, bloodthirstiness. And even some of the people that were talked about in the film, I mean, you look at leaders like Forbes Burnham in Guyana, who was at school with Sir Lyndon Pindling, and what direction Guyana went into. Yes. And, you know, maybe his ideals were really good, but where did it take the country?
And the interesting thing about Burnham was that Burnham started off a lot like Pindling, was very much sort of the same ilk, integrationist, peace. And again, you have to credit Sir Lyndon on keeping his cool, you know, throughout his term, because a lot of them lost their cool, like Burnham. A lot of them ended up tipping. It's almost like this scale where you have on one end integrationists and then on one end separatism, and then some end up going through the scale.
Yeah.
And then some go all the way onto the other end. And I think Forbes Burnham ended up on the as far left as you could go and ended up damaging that country in a way it's still trying to recover from, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, no question.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so interesting about the film. Again, it's like peeling back all these different philosophies and where, you know, where they were born and where it's taking us. Do you have hope for the future of the Bahamas?
I do. I got to be honest. I had this conversation with a friend. I mean, that hope is waning. I don't believe it's getting any better. I think it's getting worse. But I guess there's great hope in that too, because some say it's got to get really dark before it gets really, like, the darkest. It's always darkest before the dawn. So I think when you look at our newspapers and its headlines every day, it's the corruption, the crime. It's overwhelming. You know, and someone really needs to hit the reset button and go, okay, so where do we go from here? How do we move forward as a nation? And that's, the government can't do that for us. The Bahamian people need to come together and figure that out.
Do you think we have enough self-motivation to do that? Because, you know, a lot of things you hear on the radio, or, you know, there's a march and no one shows up, and or I want to have a debate about something and no one wants to say anything because, again, this is looking over the shoulder in the small country.
Right.
Do you feel like you know people that you really believe can do that?
I don't know if we're quite there yet. I think we're motivated to attend Carnival. I mean, when you see those pictures of Carnival and you saw the droves of Bahamians that came out, and I thought to myself, if we got that crowd on Bay Street to shut down downtown one day, you know, what would that mean for the government? What would that mean? What message would we be sending to the government?
Roman emperors did that, right? Panem et circenses.
That's precisely right.
Give the people bread and circuses.
Yes.
And then they won't realize
and
what's happening.
That's exactly
in
right.
In the palace.
It's a different time. I think I don't know if we've been brought to our breaking point yet, the way our forefathers were. We're still very comfortable. I mean, things are getting bad, but everyone's still eating and still going to work.
That's true.
And so there's still a great comfort level. I don't know what it's going to take for there to be this discomfort, for people to wake up and realize that things are really, really bad.
Yeah, and they are bad. It's true. And I've been traveling a lot around the Caribbean, and we're looked to as such a success story. And that when you live here, you realize it's kind of this great facade which is sort of crumbling behind. And you know, how do we shore that up? How do we? I think, you know, one of the things is this eternal question of integration. Like, how do we move forward? You know, how do people really feel Bahamian and not black, white, mixed, whatever?
Yes.
Because I think that's one of the things, you know, we're this very small society. So many people stayed here because they passionately believe in the country.
Yes.
And those people have to come together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do we overcome that?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the big questions of the 21st century for our country. I don't know about you. What do you think is one of our big questions?
That's definitely one of them. That's a big question you asked.
I know.
You
made a big film.
Right. You know what? It is a big movie. And the more I watch, the more I go, good Lord, like, I could have, you know, trimmed off the fat a bit. But it's and we're actually getting ready to do another one. We're getting ready to do one on an African leader. So it's going to be another Black Moses film mm-hmm. next year that I'm producing in Africa.
That's exciting. Wow.
Yes. So I mean, you know, it's the eternal question of the haves and have nots.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it boils down to. And the wealth in the world is, you know, it's obviously disproportionate. And
yeah.
I was traveling in Europe this summer and ran into this person from Africa, and they were like, I hear you talking about the privilege, but you don't even realize how privileged you are to just be in Europe for the summer. Like, you're counted as some of the world's privileged.
Mm-hmm.
There are many, many people who can't afford to be in Europe.
Sure. Well, I once, there was a Google thing you could do online where you could put in how much money you made and
right.
whatever, and like what your daily expenses were, what
right.
have you. And
right.
it would tell you in what percentage you were. And you know, it'll blow your mind.
It
will blow your mind because
yes.
people that struggle to pay their bills and are like
it
healthily in the
mind.
Middle class.
Yes.
Maybe sending
and
their kids to a private school.
Yeah,
sure.
Necessary.
Maybe not, but
yeah.
still, you know, have a car, pay some rent. You
yeah.
know, that puts you right there in the top 10%.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look at what's going
on
in Syria right now.
Yeah.
You know, the Syrian refugees. And I mean, I think there's no question that the whole move toward independence in the world and economic equality in the world means somebody hitting some sort of reset button.
Yeah.
And figuring out how do we go from here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Definitely distribution of wealth is one of the big.
No question.
And I wonder if there won't be kind of global riots. I thought it was very interesting, though, to watch how Europe is dealing with the immigrant crisis.
Yes. Yes.
And countries that, you know, we have historically written off as like evil empires
mm-hmm.
are suddenly being so welcoming.
Very
so,
true.
You know, things like that make me hopeful.
Yes.
For our country. My daughter is half German and half Bahamian.
Okay.
And both my daughters are. My husband's German and I'm Bahamian. And, you know, they've grown up with a stigma of being German, of course, because when you're German, you're labeled with that stigma from birth.
Right.
Whether, you know. Which is fine, because as we spoke about, you know, you have to confront your history. So they know about the Holocaust, they know who Hitler was. Do I like it when people call them Nazis at school? Not really, but, you
that's
know,
terrible.
It's terrible. But, you know,
right.
that's
right.
part of it. And they know how to deal with that. But, you know, I'm watching it how Germans are now standing at train stations with big welcome signs
right.
and giving people food and
right.
taking in a million migrants.
Right. Right.
And I think if that country could go from
I know, right.
where it was
yes.
100 years ago
right.
to where it is today.
Yeah.
You know, maybe
that's
there
remarkable.
Is hope in the world.
Right. And Berlin, I must say, is one of my favorite cities. Berlin is lovely. What's going on there?
Berlin's
right now?
Lovely. Living in Germany is lovely. They're
right.
very, you know, there's many things about it that are
right.
great. Does it have a dark side? Yes, every
right.
country does. But when I look at, you know, the way that that nation has, you know,
yes.
changed
yes.
so much.
Yes.
It really makes me hopeful. And I think
yes.
maybe we're at sort of a point like that. You know, we're dealing from a migration crisis. We're
right.
dealing with a huge disproportion between rich and poor. We're
yes.
dealing with a lot of issues.
Then maybe if we were that aware of our history, the way Germany is constantly reminded of theirs, you know, maybe you'd have a greater conscience, like you said.
Well, and I think that's why films like yours are so important.
Right.
Because knowing your history.
Right.
is where it all starts.
Right.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, you talk about the Haitians, right? And how all those, you know, you hear the Bahamians, all those stinking Haitians or whatever, but it's like Haiti's revolution
began
laid the foundation
like, exactly. But also
everyone to come after it in this region.
Yeah, and you listen to some
in
of that listen to some of that rhetoric and it sounds very much like what German people were saying about Jews in 1929.
Right.
So
right.
we need to be conscious of
right.
that the things we're laying down now for our country are going
right.
to be how we're judged in history.
Right. Right. No question.
So I think your
no
film
question.
Was really, really important. I commend you for making that. I was really riveted by it. And like I said, invited was kept stopping it and rewinding it and making me, come here, you got to look at this. So really an incredible achievement. And I hope people come out tomorrow night to the National Art Gallery to hear you speak, to see excerpts from the film. We haven't decided which bits we're playing yet. It's all good.
Yeah. I'm actually going to decide the day the excerpts are playing. But they're going to have to do with the, I'm going to have to talk with the panel and see the, what they really want to bring up.
Yeah,
and then just have the film reflect. Because everyone on the panel would have seen the film.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Then, and so everyone's going to address that. So we have Terneel Burrows from the
Rise Bahamas.
We have
Aaron Ferguson. From Citizens Review.
Duran Thompson.
From Citizens
for a Better Bahamas.
And Bishop Gomez.
And yourself.
And
so
myself.
That's a pretty great panel of people discussing sort of where the country was, where it's going, where they hope to see it going. I think it's going to be a very, very interesting debate. I really hope people come out to listen to that, but also to support your movie. I think people should go out and buy the movie. We should support Bahamian artists as much as we can. Sometimes that means just showing up to openings, to screenings, you know, telling them on their Facebook page they're doing a fantastic job. But sometimes it means just, you know, buying the film for, you know, $25 or whatever it's going to cost. Because this is something that I think all Bahamians have to watch.
The Nassau Guardian, actually, Stephen Hanna wrote a review, and he said every copy should be given with every Bahamian passport. He thought it was that important. So much thanks to The Guardian for such a glowing review of our film.
Yeah, well, a very deserved glowing review of the film. So again, that's tomorrow night. We're starting at 7:30 because we want it to be dark enough to be able to screen part of the film. And then there'll be the panel discussion, which I'm sure will be very lively. Lively and provocative, if possibly.
We're counting on it.
We're counting on it. Travolta, yes. I want to thank you so much for coming in this evening.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And for making really such an incredible
film.
And
thank you for all the awesome work you're doing over there at the National Art Gallery.
It is my privilege and pleasure, but thank you very much. So you have been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can go to www.guardiantalkradio.com, download the app, or stream us live. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.